Hello, and welcome to Reflections on Life. My name is Liz Bobo. Today, I'm going to be interviewing Al Bassler, longtime Howard County resident who I have known as a fellow resident of the county and as a friend, although we have not known each other well. So for this interview, I suggest that you picture in your mind the property at the intersection of Little Patuxent Parkway and Cedar Lane going south, where Howard County General Hospital and Howard Community College are located. And when you can picture them, then realize that this gentleman to whom we will be speaking today, Al Bassler, was born on that property and lived on that property as a child. Now, one of the busiest intersections, if not the busiest intersection in Columbia. He was born there more than 90 years ago. You will find that a little hard to believe, I think, when you see his face on the screen. And I'm really excited about the interview. So welcome, Al.
Thank you.
How many acres did your family own, roughly?
My immediate family, meaning my father and us, was 94, but my grandfather and grandmother had 300 and divided it up as a reason he wound up with the 94. And my uncle Alfred, which is the same name as mine, wound up with the college property, which was 130 acres. And old Ed wound up with 83 acres, which is by Swansfield. That took up the whole 300 original.
Wow, so Swansfield, Community College, Hospital, all on that property. Yeah. And I'm interviewing you from my home, and I'm a couple hundred feet from Swansfield right now.
Oh, yeah. You're on a property across Cedar Lane.
Yes. Oh, okay. Okay. So now it's one of the busiest intersections, as I said, if not the busiest in the county. Did your family farm the property?
Yes.
While you were living there?
Yes.
Were you trained from a young boy to help out and be a good hand on the farm?
Yeah, everybody had their chores. We wasn't, no delinquency and no drug use was unheard of. We had things we had to do every day, Sunday included, milk the cows, gather the eggs, and feed the chickens and feed the pigs and hoe the corn and the whatever. So There was no leftover time to get into mischief, although we had time for that too.
You had enough time for some mischief, huh? I know that you had at least one sister because I've been in a meditation group with her in some years past. But what about other siblings? Did you have, I assume?
Yeah, one you knew was the oldest sister, Doris, and then there was Laura Gertrude as well.
And no brothers. You were the only boy.
No, I had five brothers.
Oh, my heaven. Okay, five brothers and two sisters?
Let's see, there was eight altogether. So I guess I had four brothers, so it was eight altogether, yeah.
Okay, my heavens. Your mother was a busy woman, and your father too, I'm sure. And did you all help on the farm?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Everybody knew what they had to do every day and did it. Like three of the brothers did the cows and the farming, and I did the chickens and the hogs and gathering the eggs and get them ready. And Uncle Al went to market in Baltimore, and we would send our eggs with him because he started an egg route years earlier. And so we just sold him our eggs, and then he would get our groceries in Baltimore and bring them back.
Wow. I think of that, particularly since I've gotten to know you better and have been talking to you about your life there on that property. I think about it when I ride by, which is not that often these days because I don't go out in the car that much. But when we are not in the midst of this pandemic, I probably ride through that intersection at least once a day, as it just kind of takes, you know where I live, you know where Lloyd and I live, and it takes to just about any place I'd want to go in Columbia. And I live most of my life in Columbia. I grew up in Baltimore and I still love Baltimore very much, but I don't drive in there that often. But I drive through that property of yours or near it on a regular basis. So it was back in 1962 that Howard County had three county commissioners. We didn't have a charter form of government then with an exec and county council, but we instead had county commissioners. And they ran on a platform, the guys who were elected that year, and they were all guys, no women in politics yet at that time here in the county, or not many places in the United States for that matter. But they were up for re-election, and they campaigned on a platform of limited growth. They wanted limited growth in the area. And then just 3 years later, they granted Jim Rouse permission to build a city with 100,000 population. I happen to think that was a very good decision they made. And I love the way Columbia has developed. But what was the feeling of the populace, of the people at that time, when, you know, the campaigning had been on limited growth, and then here's this city, this small city sprouting up?
Yeah, well, actually, us back on the farm was not too aware of the legislation of popular growth. What we knew was there was a realtor named Bob Moxley going around buying farms that was already for sale. Like at first it was only $800 an acre, which was a piece of woods, which was right back of you, Swansfield. It was a landlocked piece, which had a right of way into it. But anyway, it was for sale for $800. He bought that, and then he bought what later had to pay $900, and then later $1,000, and later $1,100. It worked its way up to $1,500. And nobody knew what was going on. They just know that there was cashable checks, and they sold their property. And finally, Gadelsky, which owns Double H Ranch, which is where Town Center is now, sold his property for $3,000 an acre.
Wow.
And we held out till they proclaimed what they was going to do, because we figured if it was oil under the property, we had oil. And so there's gold in the property, we had gold. And if it's going to be a town, we was in the middle. So we stayed there till after probably 3 or 4 years after they declared they was going to build a city.
Wow. Well, at the time that your parents made the decision to sell, did they have a clearer idea of what the use of the land would be, or was it still, you know, somewhat clandestine until the various parcels had actually been bought up?
Yeah, it was clear what was going to happen. They were widening roads and had started, the hospital had started the foundations for the college, and maybe on down Century Plaza and a few things like that. Was Bryant Woods was one of the, in fact, the giant food store in Bryant Woods was one of the first things they built. We knew what was happening, and they knew that we were still sitting in the middle of their pie. But they figured sooner or later we would say, oh, we're going to sell. We're in the middle of a city. And my father didn't want to live in a city. Mm-hmm. He was in favor of selling, but during the years that we was talking to Bob Moxley, the realtor, we became educated because we would pick his brain. And finally, we found out that inheritance tax and estate tax and 310 privilege to trade farms without paying the gains tax and all that. So we traded farms rather than sell.
Now, I did not know that. I've read a fair amount about that. And, you know, in the 50th anniversary of Columbia a couple years ago, several books were published. I imagine you've seen them.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, but I have not, either have not heard that before. I haven't retained it. Very interesting. So how old were you when you were out of high school and living a normal life by that time, right?
Yeah, it's probably 30 or something like that. I was married and had lived across the road on Kaler's farm, which Kaler Hall is named after. I think they call it Kyler now, really. But
right. Well, I don't want to get too much into my life as distinguished from yours, but I'm sitting in my home, which is on the Kaler farm now. It's an out parcel that held out for years for selling. So although I live right in the center of Columbia, and I love Columbia, I love the idea of it and the, you know, integration, and I just like the whole whole idea that the preservation of open spaces, the pathway system that Rouse put in along the Middle Patuxent Valley, which I get to walk on every day just by going out my back door, it was a holdout property. And I get teased about that from some of my liberal friends that, you know, practice what you preach. But I say, well, I didn't make that decision. The decision was already made and the homes were there and it was a perfect place for me. So we had that in common. I'm going back to your property now, where you grew up. So how old were you when you started flying an airplane?
Probably about 20 or 22.
So was there an air pad or on your property?
Oh, no, it was a cow pasture with three mules and 20 cows in it. We had to get all the...
I'm showing that I'm not too sophisticated about the ways of farming. So no, where did you, I can see you laughing at me. That's okay. So where were you out on Shepherd Lane? I think you used that airport later.
Yeah, if we moved, we had seven airplanes accumulated by that town that was located exactly where the hospital is sitting.
My goodness. Okay. And who owned that property then? You owned that property?
Yeah, we owned the property where the hospital and the big parking lot is, you know, from there to Charter Drive.
Yes, yes.
Our house was where the bigger buildings is, not the doctor's offices is on Charter Drive. Then the first runway landed over the college area and actually touched down on the big parking lot area between the college property and Cedar Lane. And then when we moved, we traded farms rather than selling, and we moved everything we had, tractors, trucks, pigs, cows, airplanes, and the whole business up to Shepherd Lane, which was a 500-acre farm instead of a 94-acre farm. Mm-hmm. But we knew that this farm in the middle of Columbia would be worth whatever they make it worth. But they did it. They did the wider roads and the zoning and the permits and the underground electric and the telephone and all that sort of thing. But we didn't want to move too far from Columbia because we knew that the ripple effect of values would be near Columbia because we already seen that it was going to be a go. So we had an opportunity to kind of go to Lisbon with twice that much acreage in farmland, but we wanted to stay near Columbia to get the appreciation.
Well, you made some very good business decisions, very wise decisions your family did.
Yeah, we did.
You did, yeah.
But we sat there, we farmed there, we loved it. It was a beautiful farm. We lived there for 4 years. The prices of land went up really high because it's known that Columbia was kind of built out and Howard County was kind of built out. And therefore, lots became valuable and it was just the right distance from Washington. And people had a lot of business offices and government really in Washington. So there was wanting to go home, be home somewhere before they got way out. Some of them go to Pennsylvania and go to the Pentagon to work. Well, lots was worth $500,000 without a house on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we had to put in our own sewer plant and all because to get, and we clustered the houses to scatter them on 500 acres. We bought about 120 acres or something. And the rest was open land, streams, woods, yeah, set aside, steep slopes.
I think I mentioned a couple of
all that sort of thing.
That the Middle Patuxent River runs back behind our home. And there are just miles and miles of pathways that Rouse built and dedicated. And I think he has them crossed over in one easement after another so that people will not be able to undo that. So how is your book coming along?
Oh boy, a book is the hardest thing to do that you can imagine. It's sort of correlating a year like you do at tax time. I'm correlating 120 years.
Yeah. I can't imagine doing that, to tell you the truth, but you seem to be enjoying it, and it'll be a great feeling when you have it completed, right? Are you going to put it out for sale?
some publishers are calling me actually and saying, when, come on, what do you get her done?
I'm not surprised. Well, with the God willing that this pandemic will be over by the time you do that, and be sure to invite me to your book opening or whatever we call it. But I'm not ready to wrap up. I have a couple more things I want to talk with you about. So when you came over and sat in our yard and had iced tea with Lloyd and me a few months ago, we talked about your experience where you grew up, and you told us about your ice house. What was your ice house on the farm?
Yeah, that was on the home property, the 130 acres that the college bought.
I see.
It was located right near the house, between the house and the barn, really. And what it amounted to is a big hole in the ground, and with no walls around it, just sort of a hole in the ground. It was a shed over it, and they would cut ice off of a pond that was on that little creek between the big beech tree, which is a memorial type tree, and the cottage. And they would cut ice off of there with a saw, same saw you cut down trees with, which was hand pulled with a cross cut saw, it's called. And they would put the sawdust and shavings in there, and then we'd put a layer of ice and more shavings and more ice and fill the thing up with ice and shavings, and that gave them ice until June. And after that, it was spring water, which was still 60 degrees or something, which would keep butter and milk and eggs and all that stuff. That was in a spring house.
I think it's, since you've told me these stories, various ones of them run through my mind whenever I go by the community college property. And I go there, well, not this year, of course, because of the pandemic, but I'm at the community college at least twice a week for a concert or a book discussion or a play, you know, the theater or a movie. And so whenever I go in and out now, I mean, you're just sort of there, you know, in my mind. I wonder what Al did here by this fountain here. I wonder where they played here. And I just think I'm so pleased that you're writing this book, not just for you and not just for me, but for the community. You know, the history of Columbia, whether it would be your choice of where to live or your lifestyle or not, there's nothing comparable really in the United States to the way this place was developed and the way Jim Rouse developed it, so that there were villages and then there were neighborhoods, you know all this. And within each neighborhood, there was a school, and the school was the center of the community, you know, as I think schools had been intended to be. And as with many good ideas in growing and more grandiosity, I guess is the word I've used, we've gotten away from them, and this community brought it back. And the contribution from your family with that property, of course, it wasn't a contribution, but it wasn't a monetary contribution, but you certainly contributed a lot to the story of the community, you know, to know that that's what was going on there when Rouse bought it up and made it part of the community he did. Is there anything you'd like me to cover with you in the last 5 minutes here? I can come up with other things, but is there anything you'd like to tell the listeners that I haven't asked?
Well, I agree with you that the Rouse Company did a lot better job of developing, which was going to come sooner or later, however done it.
Yeah.
He did a better job than a dozen realtors or developers, which each one had their own ideas, and everybody would have wanted a filling station at a high rise or something, business intersection or something, rather than good planning. Mm-hmm. Actually, you can go to Columbia and you're in one village, as you implied, and there's another village right across the valley in another area, which you go up the road a little ways and you're in a whole new village. And that's good, the way to live, but it's a way bad way to find an address. Like when you find Mulberry Streets, you got 1,000 addresses. But when you find Rainbow Row or whatever it is, you got about a dozen houses.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a good place to be and a good place to live, and it's organized, and the mall's there, and the community centers are there, and like you said, the schools are there. A lot better than it would have piecemeal with other developers.
Absolutely. Yeah. I absolutely agree with you. And I'll go so far as to say, I don't even think what you just expressed is an opinion. I think it's a fact. You know, I think it's a fact that it would have been that way, and that it is so much more conducive to having better connections with your neighbors. So you don't fly your plane anymore, do you?
I'm doing 3/4 as much flying as I ever did.
Do you really?
I'm thinking about it, talking about it, and looking at it. Only thing I'm not doing is flying.
Yeah. So what is it? Anything else you would like to tell me? I can come up with questions, but is there anything else you'd like to tell the people who are listening about your life on the farm where the hospital and the community college now stand?
Yeah, well, it was all farmland, and our nearest neighbors really was our cousins, and they was a mile away. We lived between Uncle Ed and Uncle Al, and Uncle George lived on the property all the way down to Orne Brown Road. And he owned 150 acres down there, which was separate from the 300. So the whole property was actually 450. But Uncle George bought his, as he got older and got married, he bought that piece where the college parking lot and buildings are. It was a big cornfield that we planted. Well, we had corn planters that you pulled with mules or horses by the time I got into it. But before that, they actually planted corn, you know, with a hoe and dropped the seeds and a hoe and dropped the seeds. But what us kids remember the most is they would put 3 seeds in the ground, but they only wanted 2, but some might not come up. And thinning corn was a bend over job, like whenever you walk between 2 rows.
Yeah.
If you got 3, you stoop over and pull one up. And us kids would take the job of thinning corn 12 acres on each farm, a quarter of field.
One quarter of a dollar.
I got
that's what you meant, a quarter of a dollar for a field. And what was the dimension of, quote, a field, end quote?
A field probably like where the college parking lot and the buildings are, ran from Little Patuxent Parkway all the way down to the, not quite to the creek where the big pond is, but between the hospital and the big tree where my uncle really lived. That was the old home place where the big beech tree, and it's sort of a big deal. It's the Arborist Society's figure. It dates back to the signing of the Constitution.
After you came to visit us last summer, and that was one of the stories you told us, Lord and I went over to the community college campus and walked around and found that tree that you had told us about. And they have a plaque on it. And I mean, I go to the community college, as I told you earlier, on a very regular basis for arts functions and related functions. And I had never seen it. So it was a treat to know the story behind that from you. And when your book comes out, I'm sure there are going to be all kinds of stories that those of us who have, you know, lived in Columbia for some time, and even newcomers. I think it's just wonderful to have that heritage for us. So.
Yeah, well, I walked down to the, while I was over there taking pictures of the big beech tree, noticed it was kind of old, a little bit doughty and brash, you might say, and I became concerned that the ice storm and wind might break it down. So I was discussing that with you, and you found out, I suggested they put cables up in there so it don't break, and they already got the cables.
They had put the cables up. That's exactly right. So here's a question that's a little, probably not real good to bring up at the very end, but Lloyd just handed me a note, and I do want to ask you about it, given all the coverage that we're having now. And watch, I have been, I don't know if the name Ta-Nehisi Coates means anything to you, but I've been reading his books from the beginning, everyone he's ever written. So to your knowledge, were there ever slaves working even around the area where your farm was? Were there any slave owners that you can think back or know of?
No, we never even heard the word slave.
Isn't that something? Mm-hmm.
30 years old or so, I guess, actually, because we was busy milking. And what we ate, we'd grow in a big garden, and my mother would get on the phone, well, an old telephone that you crank, and it was like a little cabinet hanging on the side of the wall with batteries in it, big batteries, I mean, 8 inches tall, two of them. And you'd crank the thing, and it would go jingle, 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 and ring a bell, and you'd have to stand facing the mouthpiece and hold the earphone up to your ear, which was on a long wire. They would discuss with each other what happened today, and I would remember hearing, well, I got 230 quarts of tomatoes and corn canned, and so many half gallons of peaches, and so many half gallons of pears and plums and all that sort of thing. And we would churn our own butter. We'd have to crank that old churn, flop, 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 until it
and
finally...
That you'd be set for the winter with your pears and peaches and tomatoes, right?
Yeah, that was a recession, whichever you call it, recession. Anyway, that lasted for years, like 10, and we stayed put, and we growed what we ate, and we ate what we growed, and we scarcely knew there was a depression other than we had an old radio, which looked like a kitchen cabinet. It sat on the floor with four legs, and it was a wooden cabinet. And you'd walk up to it and stand up to it and turn knobs till you got the right station you wanted.
Are you writing about that in your book?
Yeah, I'm going to put everything that I've said here plus a lot more.
Yeah.
I got a lot of pictures. I joined the camera club in the sixth grade. Miss Shell was the teacher. And they said, what club you want to join, this. And I said, camera club. So I got a camera, an old box camera, Brownie, whatever it is. Uh-huh. I started taking pictures, and then I got into a 35 millimeter, and then I got into, the laptop that I'm talking in now takes the best pictures. You can blot them out, you can put more in, and you can arrange them. Anyway, I'd like to show you a picture of something. I'll hold it up.
It's me
flying upside down as it goes by. Can you see that?
Yes, I can. I can. That's your plane.
There it goes again.
And what's there? Is it a he or a she?
It's an it.
It's an it. Okay. What is its name again?
We called it the Snapping Beetle because I'd owned two or three airplanes before that, and I wanted to buy this airplane because it did good acrobatics, but somebody else had bought it when I went to get it. So I bought a Ryan PT-22 radial engine airplane, which was strong and did acrobatics, but it lost altitude when you do acrobatics. Like I'd climb up to 2,500 feet to do my little series of loops and rolls and snap rolls.
This is all new to me. I had no idea that you did that. Well, Al, I just love your stories. I can't wait to see your book when it comes out. Be sure to let me know, and we'll be in touch anyway. But you have I'm going to use the word charming, just such a charming way of telling the stories.
And here's the cover of my book right here.
The cover of your book. Let me read that, please. Howard County, 1900 to 2020. Big changes. How one farmer changed with the changes. That's really beautiful. It really is. I've loved this interview. I look forward to staying in touch with you. I want to be sure to be present for the grand opening of your book sales if you do that. And I bet you anything the community college will want to know. Well, I want to tell you in wrapping up this interview that in the midst of these difficult times that we're living in now and so much uncertainty, you are a real breath of fresh air and just a joy to talk with, Al. I just absolutely love my conversations with you, and I'm looking forward to their continuing into the future. So you take good care of yourself.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. This has been an interview with Al Bassler, 95-year-old resident pre-Columbian, and this has been Reflections on Life and What a Life He's Living.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.
We're